cases which we presented to you in this series, the question has been not who did it, but why. That is why I've always found the particular case which I'm going to tell you about intriguing. In fact, we've called it murder without motive. Imagine, then, that you are a member of the jury at a case which, in its own way, is something of a classic. If you'd been living in the city of Edinburgh in 1865, you might easily have been brought to apply your minds to this problem. You would have spent 5 days in the jury box. 5 days, which, as a writer of the time put it, were like five great acts of a terrible tragedy. Time and again each day, you would have inevitably have turned your eyes towards the dock where sat. But it's better to go back and let you see for yourselves the unlikely road which brought to that dock this handsome, gentle-looking 40-year-old doctor, Edward Pritchard. The doctor had been married in the autumn of 1850, and his wife's family had bought a practice for him in Hunmanby in Yorkshire. It seemed that the doctor was not a great success. The Pritchards, in due course, moved to Glasgow. He became a director of the Glasgow Athenaeum, a voluntary examiner for the Society of Arts. He gave lectures. Yes, indeed, he gave lectures. It was his favorite hobby. And the records show that he was an arresting, even startling lecturer.
I have plucked the eaglets from their eyries in the deserts of Arabia, and hunted the Nubian lion in the prairies of North America.
A favorite subject of his was the Fiji Islands, but unfortunately for his reputation, his thrilling facts were never quite the same twice. Then there was his friendship with the great Italian patriot, Garibaldi. He loved talking about that.
This walking stick, ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to say, was a present to me from the great Garibaldi, as this inscription testifies.
Oh, man, I've seen the doctor with that stick often, and he had no inscription on it then. I don't believe he ever clapped eyes on Garibaldi. He's just a big liar, and that's not all I've heard it said.
No, Edward Pritchard wasn't making much impression on the good citizens of Glasgow. Inevitably, it reflected itself in his practice. He had a good house in Sauchio Street and a servant, but the money that bought the house was borrowed, £500, from his mother-in-law, Mrs. Taylor. So there we have the situation. The respectable, if not very popular or prosperous doctor, the quiet, dull, provincial household. Every outward sign of mutual affection and tranquility. No sign of strain or passion or desperation. None of the emotional fusses which are often found leading to the detonation of violent crime. Let the judge set the scene for you.
The time over which this history runs is but short. It commences in the month of November and terminates upon the 18th of March with the death of Mrs. Pritchard. The scene of the double tragedy is equally contracted. It is all confined within the four walls of the dwelling house in Sauchiehall Street. For from that house, Mrs. Pritchard never moved from the time she returned from Edinburgh a little before Christmas.
But no sooner had Mrs. Pritchard returned from Edinburgh to her home in Glasgow than she began to feel ill. The symptoms which had worried her before her holiday in Edinburgh came back to plague the poor woman again. As Jenny, the maid, put it.
I'm worried about the mistress. She's nowhere at all and she's getting worse. I'm at wit's end to know what to cook for her. Her body must eat and she doesn't seem to relish anything. Up in the middle of the night, brandy and poultices. It can't go on. Well, I'll be ill for long. Gate six. There's her bell again.
Was that Mrs. Pritchard's bell I heard?
Yes, Doctor, it was that. It never hardly stops, poor soul. And Mary's gone away to see what she wants.
Good. Well, Jeannie, you'll be glad to hear that we're going to have a nurse.
A nurse, Doctor?
Yes, Jeannie. You know Dr. Cowan, Mrs. Pritchard's cousin, who was through from Edinburgh the other day? Well, he's spoken to Mrs. Pritchard's mother, and she's coming through to look after our invalid.
Oh, I'm right glad to hear that, Doctor. It'll be a great relief to you. It's a blessing.
Yes, Jeannie, a blessing. Yes. Yes, a great blessing.
I wonder if it was such a blessing to the gallant doctor. Maybe the arrival of his mother-in-law, Mrs. Taylor, at that moment could not have been more inconvenient. She was an obstacle, and to a determined man, obstacles have to be removed.
Jeannie. Oh, Mrs. Taylor, I'm real glad to see you.
Yes, Jeannie, I'm sure you are. You must all have been having a very trying time. I've just seen Mrs. Pritchard, and she tells me she can't eat anything. Now, I want you to prepare some tapioca. I'm sure she'll like that. You must get her to eat something.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Tapioca. I've never tried any of that. Yes, ma'am. I'll get it right away.
Come along, Mary Jane, dear. Do try it. It's delicious and so light and easy to digest. Please, dear, just a little to please me. You must keep up your strength. I've had it made specially for you. Look, we'll sprinkle a little sugar on it, and I'll taste a little just to show you how good it is.
It's the old lady, Mrs. Taylor. She's been taken bad. Oh, she's awful sick. Where is the baking soda?
Tragic story of the first victim of that fatal house. A week later, Mrs. Taylor was taken violently ill again. Pritchard sent for another doctor, a Dr. Patterson who lived nearby.
Ah, Patterson, how kind of you to come so quickly. Before we go upstairs, let me tell you what has happened. My mother-in-law, she has been nursing my poor dear wife, you know. She was writing some letters this evening when suddenly she fell out of the chair in a fit. I'm afraid it's apoplexy, Doctor. Now, if you'll come with me...
Has your mother-in-law been subject to these attacks before, Pritchard?
No, not to my knowledge. She's an old lady, of course. And she's... Well, you know, Doctor, she's...
No, Doctor, I do not know. I've not the lady's acquaintance. I've not attended any of your family before.
Oh, yes, quite. I realize that. But what I was going to say is that the old lady has, you know, rather unfortunate habits.
In what way, Doctor?
Well, she likes a drop, I'm afraid.
You mean spirits?
Yes, she has the habit of taking a drop. No, not to excess, you understand. But I think perhaps this time...
She is intoxicated.
Well, I wouldn't quite say that, you know, but at her age, you know, and of course another thing I should tell you, Doctor. I've discovered that since she came to stay with us only a fortnight ago, that she habitually takes one of those patent sedatives. You know, a small quantity of opium.
I think if I may see the patient...
She's had a good swig at it.
And that's as may be. Point is that in my view she's beyond medical aid. The case is hopeless.
Oh, surely not.
And the other person I take it to be Mrs. Pritchard.
Yes, my poor dear wife. Oh, how terrible this is for her. And she's so unwell herself. Gastric fever, you know.
Really? Well, Doctor, I feel I can serve no purpose by me.
At 1 o'clock that morning, Mrs. Taylor died. Almost immediately after the death of Mrs. Taylor came a small, insignificant incident.
Jeannie, your attention for a moment, please. I want to speak to you most seriously. I have just found this bottle in Mrs. Taylor's pocket. You will recognize it, Mary. I believe she sent you to the chemist to have it filled.
Yes, I mixed it.
Exactly. And you will notice how little is left now. It is dangerous stuff if an overdose is taken. It contains opium. She has taken all that in a few days. Oh, I'm deeply shocked. Of course, I had no idea. Now, I'm going to put this bottle away, and I want you never to refer to it. For the sake of the old lady herself, you understand. It would never do a man in my position, I mean. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Taylor had been Dr. Pritchard's patient. Dr. Patterson was called in as a consultant. Yet it was to Dr. Patterson that the registrar, on Pritchard's instructions, referred for the death certificate. Dr. Patterson refused.
The death of Mrs. Taylor was sudden, unexpected, and to me, mysterious. In the circumstances, I cannot agree to signing this certificate.
So, Dr. Pritchard supplied the certificate himself. Primary cause of death, paralysis. Duration, 12 hours. Secondary cause, apoplexy. An extraordinary certificate, but any doctor will tell you that apoplexy invariably precedes. Paralysis follows as a result. And remember, Pritchard himself had told Dr. Patterson that the attack had come on just before he was summoned. One night at supper, Dr. Pritchard sent a piece of cheese upstairs to his wife. He didn't touch it, but Jenny McLeod and the cook ate it, and both were violently ill. A few days later...
Oh, come quickly, please. She's awful bad. It's cramps, I think, and she's raving.
Pull yourself together, Jeannie. I shall go up at once. Now you run and get Dr. Patterson. Hurry.
Oh, she's gone off her head. She says her mother's there. She talks to her.
Here, girl. Go down to the chemist and get this made up. Richard, your wife looks as if she's not slept for days. She's at the end of her tether. All we can do at the moment is try to get her some rest. I've sent for a sleeping draught. I'm surprised you don't keep a few simple drugs on the premises.
No, I never have. With the chemist just round the corner, anyhow, it's dangerous with children about.
Nonsense, man. Are you a doctor or aren't you? I can do no more. The patient must have sleep first. I'll call back in the morning.
Unconscious. I can't rouse her.
Mary Jane, my dear, my darling.
Oh, doctor, she's dead.
No.
Mary Jane, come back, it's Edward. My dear Mary Jane, come back. Don't leave your poor Edward. Mary Jane.
In his diary, the doctor wrote, "Died here at 1 a.m., Mary Jane, my own beloved wife, aged 38 years. No torments surrounded her bedside, but like a calm, peaceful lamb of God, she passed away." A nice, sentimental soul was our doctor, Pritchard. Incidentally, again supplied the death certificate. Variety being the spice of life, he attributed the cause of his wife's death to gastric fever. He went through to Edinburgh to arrange the funeral. In the presence of her family, we are told he exhibited a great deal of feeling. He specially asked for the coffin to be opened, that he might for the last time kiss the cold lips of his dead wife. A macabre moment surely unparalleled in the history of crime. But while he was away from Glasgow, something happened there. The police received a letter.
Sir, Dr. Pritchard's mother-in-law died suddenly and unexpectedly about 3 weeks ago at his house in Sockey Hall Street, Glasgow, under circumstances at least very suspicious. His wife died today, also suddenly and unexpectedly, and under circumstances equally suspicious. We think it right to draw your attention to the above as the proper person to take action in the matter and see justice done.
The letter was anonymous, signed in Latin, a lover of justice. Its authorship was never established. But the police moved quickly. The house in Sockey Hall Street was searched. The fine comb of detective inquiry was drawn through the life of Pritchard, and such were the results that, as he stepped from the Edinburgh train, the doctor was arrested. The inquiries went on. Post-mortem, exhumation of the mother-in-law, chemical analysis. The case built up, and so the trial began. Experts swore that the death of both women came from the same cause, chronic arsenical poisoning. But perhaps the moment that turned the scales of public opinion was one which came as a complete dramatic surprise. The Solicitor General, leading counsel for the prosecution, is examining the servant, Jenny McLeod.
Did Mrs. Pritchard ever see her husband use any familiarities towards you?
Yes.
Or what were they?
This is very unpleasant, but there is no avoiding it. You must tell the whole story.
She saw him kissing me.
Did she speak to you about it?
I spoke to her. I wanted to get away, but she wouldn't have let me.
Why?
She said she would speak to the doctor.
Did you return with child to the doctor?
Yes.
Before or after the kissing incident?
After.
Was the child born?
Oh, no.
Did the relationship between you and the doctor continue after this?
Yes.
Did he ever speak of marrying you?
Yes.
What did he say? When he spoke of marrying you, did he speak of his wife? What did he say? You cannot possibly like standing there, but you must if you do not answer the question. What were the words he used to you?
Tell us what he said, because it must be known.
Did he say he would marry you if his wife died?
Yes.
Did he say that often?
Oh, no, just once.
Was that before his wife became ill?
A motive at last? I think if you've been serving on that jury, your mind would have seized on this dramatic revelation as the first indication of a possible answer to the great question, if he did it, why did he do it? Then the defense counsel, Mr. Rutherford Clark, took up the same point in his speech to the jury.
Gentlemen, if Jeannie McLeod is to be believed, if without any corroboration whatever, Jeannie McLeod's story is to be taken as true in the absence of any proof, surely you cannot conceive that therein lies a motive which would influence the prisoner. The motive, as I understand it, seems to be that he desired to marry this girl. This girl whom he had already long possessed. And that to carry out this intention, he was ready to tread over the dead bodies of those two defenseless women. Marriage may, as she said, have been spoken of in jest, but it's surely not a motive.
When the judge addressed the jury, they used their minds of any idea that the question of motive had been answered for them.
I suggest to you that the motive of the prisoner's pecuniary difficulties would be relieved by the death of Mrs. Taylor does not seem to have been satisfactorily made out. Another motive has been suggested, but it is for you to say whether you think that an illicit connection with a servant girl is sufficient to account for his taking up the nefarious purpose of murdering his wife. Absence of is not a very uncommon thing. You are not in a position to say there was no motive. And the absence of evidence of motive is not a sufficient reason for acquitting the prisoner if you are satisfied from the other evidence that he is guilty.
The jury was out for only 55 minutes.
Have you agreed upon a verdict? The jury unanimously find the prisoner guilty of both charges.
And so, on a fine summer's morning in July 1865, Edward Pritchard, with a prayer on his lips, mounted the scaffold which had been erected overnight on a piece of open ground by the River Tyne at Glasgow. Mm-hmm.
motive? Maybe. But no man on the jury would send Pritchard to the gutters. He'd have lost a night's sleep wondering if justice had been done. For into the condemned cell a few days before he died, the prisoner called for pen and paper and wrote,
"I, Edward William Pritchard, in the full possession of all my senses and understanding the awful position in which I am placed, do make a free and full confession that the sentence pronounced upon me is just, that I am guilty of the death of my mother-in-law, Mrs. Taylor, and of my wife, Mary Jane Pritchard, and that I can assign no motive for the conduct which actuated me, beyond a species of terrible madness and the use of ardent spirits. I hereby freely and fully..."
Yes, perhaps the title was right, for in the long run, Dr. Pritchard could not find a motive himself. Well, this is Clive Brooks saying au revoir till the next time we meet, to discuss another of the secrets of Scotland Yard. Thank you.